2019 at 8:31 in the morning. Note on our roll call that board members that are present, myself, Dr. Barbara Campbell, Dr. Leonetti, Mr. John Rhodes, our public member, Mark Harris is here today with us from the AG's office, Heather Brodus, our executive director. I invited Dr. Mary Peters because of our first presentation here with our other special guest from CE Broker. The gentleman's name from CE Broker is?
Don.
Welcome and thank you. So we're going to just go ahead and move to, for our first order of business is to, for Donald Oliva to do his presentation regarding CE Broker, which we did have some discussion about this at our last meeting.
Heather, do you want to give any kind of summary or reported presentation?
I don't think so. I know that the board we do is kind of at a draw from the community, the platforms that I can see, where they can upload their communication packet and talk to the board.
And I was just thinking, so in the meantime, I noticed everyone does have a laptop here. If I send out a meeting link to you, would you be able to forward it to everyone? Because I can do the presentation on my laptop and project it to all of your devices, if that might be easier. And let me go ahead and turn that off so it's not in your eyes over here.
So well, is that going to just take a few minutes? Okay, because what I'm going to do then while he's getting that set up is, let's just, we can proceed with our review of our, on number four, Board of Review Discussion and Action Against Board Meeting Minutes, September 11th, 2019. I did see one problem. Dr. Patrick Farrell is listed as an attorney. He's the licensee. Find anything or have any? Oh, come on, your computer.
I'll make a motion to accept the general session minutes.
Okay, any discussion?
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved.
Okay.
On a conference call, we're going to call her about 9:15.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Her phone clicks that, I can just project the screen up there.
Okay.
Okay, actually, we probably could move on to the issuances of licenses. We have Dr. Sarah Shipley and Dr. Scott David Walker. I didn't see everybody's pay on fees. One, Dr. Walker's fees were waived. I didn't see any issues with any of the applications. And those are all complete, correct? Yes.
I make a motion to accept the applications for licensure.
Any other discussion on that? All in favor of issuing licenses to Drs. Sarah Shipley and Scott David Walker? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved.
And I just forwarded you the email, so you may have gotten that. And I do have Donna Dalton from Board of Behavioral Health coming down to help with the projector, Board of Behavioral Health. This is their equipment, so she has the cables and that we need.
So where will we be? You're going to send that to us via our regular?
Yeah, I sent it just to the email that I always use.
Now, of course, mine's going through updates.
Dr. Leonetti, Mr. Rhodes, did you? And I emailed it to you as well. Oh, here's the password.
Yeah, if it's easier than doing in the emails, I can.
Yeah, I don't have an email
either. Mine's, well, and mine decided to do its updates and log me off, so.
Thank you so much for bearing with me here. Thank you so much. Double screen display. There we go. Thank you so much for coming down to help us out. Am I okay to get started over here? All right. Thank you all for bearing with me through those technical difficulties. All right, so I have a quick slide deck I wanted to run through that just gives kind of a broad overview of CE Broker and talks a little bit about our company and how we help other licensing agencies throughout the country. But if at any point any of you has any questions, you know, feel free to jump in and cut me off and I can clarify further. So to put it very briefly, CE Broker is a unique software company that partners with licensing agencies to simplify and automate the process of continuing education. And the primary benefit that we've always pitched is that we're able to do it without any mandatory cost or burden to the primary stakeholders. I think just about everyone can agree that CE compliance is notoriously a headache, and specifically the audits, so both for licensees and state regulators. So we do what we can to simplify that process wherever possible and just make it more manageable for both parties to deal with. We've seen the software platform model become pretty prominent in the world today. Obviously, you have industry leaders like Amazon or Airbnb that have changed the way we live and do business. But personally, we feel that the regulatory world has been somewhat underserved by modern technology. So it's been our goal to change that state by state. On the screen here, you can see a helpful graphic, which really breaks down how CE Broker works and where the data is flowing. So as you can see, information is coming in from licensees, from educational providers, and from regulatory boards, and all of that's aggregated onto one platform and broken down by a comprehensive compliance engine that we customize to each state. So there's no one-size-fits-all with CE Broker. We're actually tailoring the system for each individual licensing board and jurisdiction. As far as our history goes, we were founded back in 2003, and we originally began tracking for the Florida Department of Health. And that's where we were essentially born into the realm of continuing education. And that was in response to a $0 RFP, so that's also where the no-cost model came about. And it really wasn't until the last 3 or 4 years that we started looking outside of Florida, kind of recognized that the issues that Florida dealt with were shared by other licensing boards throughout the country. But since then, we've grown exponentially. So we've now expanded to track continuing education for more than 120 state boards across the U.S., and we have a presence in 17 states today. And then we also support a network of more than 7,000 educational providers who are listing courses on our platform, And actually reporting the attendance rosters and completion data directly into the system. And that's truly the secret ingredient that makes this so valuable to the licensing boards and to the auditing staff members. So a lot of times the licensees won't have to report themselves. The actual instructors or the providers will upload the roster directly to CE Broker. And then we also have experience tracking for more than 200 unique profession types. So needless to say, if the profession has a continuing education component, it's more than likely something we've dealt with in the past or that we're already tracking for somewhere in the US. On the map here, you can just see a visual of our growth over the last couple years. So we're still largely concentrated down in the southeast, and we have begun expanding out west. And we have quite a few exciting projects lined up, like in California and New Mexico. But one important thing to note here is that our current partnerships include a variety of umbrella agencies. So a lot of times we're working with groups like the Florida Department of Health or South Carolina's LLR, Labor Licensing and Regulation. But whether it's an independent board or the entire department, our solution does scale very well. So we've handled a little bit of everything up to this point. Obviously, in today's day and age, privacy and security are paramount for any organization. So our platform is compliant with Federal Information Processing Standards, or FIPS. We're also DSS compliant, and we have geo-redundant data servers in Jacksonville, Florida, and Boulder, Colorado, that just help ensure stability and high uptime. But aside from this, the main way we protect ourselves is just by avoiding very personal or sensitive data. So anytime CE Broker contracts with a new board, a majority of the information we collect is already public-facing on the license verification pages for consumers. So that's going to be information like name, license number, issue date, expiration date. But if the information doesn't affect their CE requirements, we don't require it for tracking, so we don't collect anything like social security numbers or any private data beyond simple contact information. And then another, main benefit to this platform we've developed is that each of the three main stakeholders all receive a unique login, so they're able to access the platform and kind of complete their own piece of the puzzle. So boards, licensees, and staff members at the agency obviously are able to log in and kind of fulfill their half of the equation here. The first stakeholder to take a closer look at here is going to be the regulatory entities. So the board has access to an auditing dashboard where you can view individual CE records on any licensee. You can generate bulk audits and pull detailed compliance reports. And these reports can range from something as simple as how many of our licensees are compliant versus not compliant on any given calendar day to even more detailed information like how many individuals are meeting their new ethics requirement. So the solution really aims to empower licensing boards who are typically dealing with, a limited number of staff, but thousands of licensees. So the goal really is just to equip them with tools that makes auditing a much more efficient and accurate process. And there are typically two main auditing methods that we support. And these are going to be your standard post-renewal audits and then a fully automated auditing option. So with option one, we've coined the term CE at renewal or compliance at renewal. And this is where we integrate with the licensing database. So in Arizona, a lot of boards are using the e-license system. So CE Broker can actually plug in with that system. So as a licensee goes through that renewal flow online, the board would know whether or not they've actually met their renewal requirements. And the system can ping CE Broker in real time to check their status. So in this scenario, each board or the department can implement what we call a soft stop or a hard stop. With the hard stop, the licensees can't renew until they've completed all of their requirements. That's currently how Florida operates with CE Broker, and we've seen a few other states start to move in that direction. But on the other hand, with a soft stop, this is where the licensees can still proceed with renewal, but they'll typically receive a pop-up warning at that last step, that notifies them that they haven't yet reported all of their continuing education hours yet, and that they understand by proceeding with renewal, they're asserting that they've met those requirements and understand that they may be audited, so they can still proceed with that attestation. And then from there, it's very easy for our system to flag any of the individuals who completed a renewal but maybe did not reflect as compliant. So if the board wanted to do a 2% audit of that specific population, you have the ability to do so on this platform. With option two, again, these are just going to be that standard post-renewal audit. So once the licensees have renewed successfully, whether the board does a 3% or a 5% audit, whatever amount, they can complete that audit through CE Broker. So instead of the licensees mailing or faxing in their CEUs, they can just upload them digitally onto this platform. In addition to the auditing tools we provide, the system also has the capability to help boards manage provider approvals if necessary. So we've seen that having a dedicated staff member to process all of the individual provider or course applications can be a very time-consuming process. So the platform includes a mini accreditation system that can collect any of those applications and either route it to the appropriate staff member or to the CE committee for review. So we're essentially taking the application off of the state website and just turning it into an online workflow where the providers can attach any documentation and it's sent off to the board for final approval. And one last thing to note here, we do program the system to understand anything within the board's CE laws. So even if you guys are not completing individual approvals, but maybe you accept anything that's accredited by a national association or approved by another state board, we can build it out by criteria. So as long as a certain course or an event meets that criteria, it'll be approved and able, you know, to be accessed by the licensees on our platform. As far as the implementation process with CE Broker, it's usually pretty straightforward and around 90 to 120 days from the contract being signed to actually having the system live and ready for the licensees. So there's a lot of research done on our end throughout this process with plenty of communication back and forth. And, you know, majority of the work for us is just mapping out the exact CE requirements based on your laws and rules. So if there's any subcategories where they might have a prescribing requirement or medical errors or any unique categories that they have to fulfill, we try and program all of that out ahead of time so that no matter what your specific situation is, when you're logging into the system, you'll always see the requirements that are relevant for your license type. This slide here just discusses our implementation methodology. Without getting too technical, you know, we essentially coordinate between five different teams to manage the implementation for any board. And like I said, a majority of that work is just going through the laws and rules, making sure that we've created 100% accurate transcripts. For some boards, that process is relatively straightforward, but for others, it can get pretty tricky. One of our most recent clients was the New Mexico Board of Nursing, where they had one license type that had up to 72 different scenarios that would involve different requirements for advanced practice nurses, depending on if you held a certain national certification. So it really is our job to find every nuance within your rules and simplify those situations as much as possible. Moving on to the educational providers. So first and foremost, once a course has been approved by the board, or if it satisfies any national accreditation requirements, it'll appear on the CE Broker course search. So providers are given free exposure on our platform. And right now, there's roughly 2 million licensees who come on to CE Broker to report their CE and to find courses. So there's a lot of traffic that can be easily directed towards the providers, which obviously helps them sell more courses. And all that we really ask in return is that those providers report the attendance rosters into the system. This is usually optional for most professions. The only one we've really come across that mandates providers report is typically real estate. But, you know, we try to encourage them as much as possible and eliminate any barriers to entry with the platform. And what we've seen is that licensees really prefer taking courses from providers who report for them, and it can help us ensure accuracy of the data and avoid any of those common errors where a licensee might say they took a three-hour course, but it was only supposed to count for 2 hours. So just getting that data directly from the source is a big piece of what makes the system so valuable. And this is just a breakdown, again, of how information gets into CE Broker. So about half of it is coming in when the providers report themselves, and then the remaining portion comes in from licensee self-reports. So anytime a licensee uploads a certificate to CE Broker, they usually have to answer a series of state-determined questions. So typically, anything that you require from them today on the audit form can be asked during this upload process. So they'll have to enter the instructor name, the accreditation number, the date the course was taken, any relevant information. And then the final step is to upload a copy or an image of that certificate. And then within the provider suite, there are multiple reporting options designed to accommodate anyone and everyone. So even if it's a local provider that just punches in license numbers one by one, or a medium-sized provider that has an Excel file or a larger attendance sheet, we try to offer something for everyone there. And a lot of the largest providers who are operating nationally, like Relias or HealthStream and OnCourse Learning, we've already worked with those providers and gotten integrations with them. So we have system-to-system communication set up. So any courses taken from one of those major national providers will instantly reflect within a licensee's CE Broker account. So there's usually not any manual reporting necessary in those cases. And then the final stakeholder here is the licensee account. And this is one area where we're able to generate a little bit of revenue that actually helps us fund the system and keep everything free for the state. But our business does operate on a freemium model. So the main focus is to make sure that licensees have access to all the tools they need for managing CE compliance and a user-friendly experience without having to pay for the entire experience. So we have three different account types that allow us to generate revenue, and it's based on, again, optional subscriptions. So we're frequently compared to a TurboTax model. where a majority of users are just coming on to take advantage of a free basic account. And it doesn't cost you anything, but you have to work through things on your own, so it does require more manual effort. So with the basic account, licensees can sign on, view their compliance status at a glance. They can report and upload any necessary documentation to respond to an audit, find and compare course offerings, take advantage of our mobile apps, and also view a chronological course history, so they have access to their records, and it details anything that they've already reported, along with anything that's been reported by an educational provider. And then the next two account types we offer are professional and concierge. And those are $29 per year and then $99 per year, respectively. And they offer added convenience that can just save you a lot of time and take some of the guesswork out of compliance. So with those accounts, you get added features like a compliance transcript, which takes you through step by step for every requirement you need to meet. And it essentially holds your hand along the way. Also things like an account manager who can basically act as your personal assistant. They can report CE on your behalf, contact providers to register you for courses or events. They can do everything other than actually take the courses for you. But with this freemium model, the licensees are always given the final choice. So we try to include all the necessities available within a free basic account. But plenty of folks see added value in one of the premium accounts. So we pride ourselves on a business model that only generates revenue if we're going above and beyond for our customers. And then for full transparency, out of the 2 million licensees that use CE Broker today, it's roughly 87% are using that basic free account, with the remaining 13% being split between either the professional or the concierge. One unique aspect of our business that does set us aside is that we offer a dedicated support center for all of our clients based here in the United States. So licensees can actually call CE Broker whether they have a question about how many hours they need for the upcoming renewal, or if they just need someone to walk them through reporting step by step. Our CE experts are available Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., and they're based down at our headquarters in Jacksonville, Florida, so we don't outsource our support center. We actually manage it all in-house. And it is significantly more expensive that way, but it's a big reason why our CSAT scores average 4.5 or higher out of 5 stars. So quality is always the focus there for us. And as you can see on the screen here, we do handle quite a bit of volume for our partners. And we'll stay open late a lot of times just to accommodate the amount of licensees we get calling in. As I'm sure many of you are familiar, you know, people like to wait until the last minute, even with their continuing education. So just last quarter, our support center was open until midnight, helping licensees in Florida as a big renewal period came to a close. But every call we receive is one less going to the board. So last year, we took more than 100,000 phone calls, and licensees can reach us over the phone. They can live chat with us on our website or shoot us over an email and expect a response within 24 hours. And our support center and the communications teams are really a critical piece of the operation that ensures success of the system after we launch. And they do work tirelessly on behalf of our regulatory partners to educate and spread awareness with the licensees. And then arguably the most popular feature we offer now are the mobile apps for CE Broker. So these are free for all licensees. It doesn't matter what account type you have. So whether it's basic or one of the paid accounts, anyone can download the mobile app and you can snap and report your certificates on the go. You can see your CE compliance status in real time, find courses on a phone or tablet, and it's a free download on Apple or Android devices. And we see a lot of the younger licensees doing everything mobile these days. So even if they don't have a laptop computer, you know, there's really no excuse. They can just open up their smartphone, snap a photo of their certificate, and handle everything on the go. And then finally, the last piece to mention here is just that CE Broker has built out a simple API that allows us to interface with a licensing database. So again, with that e-licensing system, I would say to think of our platform as almost like a plug-in application. So we can connect with e-license just to introduce added efficiency and enhance a lot of the processes that fall into the realm of continuing education. And on the screen there are just some of the vendors that we've worked with in the past. But again, we're very flexible, so anytime we're working in a state, it doesn't really matter what the board has, whether it's an older access database or one of the newer online systems, we're more than happy to work with that vendor to simplify that CE process as much as possible. So that's everything I had for my slides. Did you all have any questions that I might be able to help with? So we don't do the licensing section, but as far as the continuing education portion of that renewal, we can connect to that licensing database. Okay.
What is the group that has the most members that we contact?
Oh, in terms of licensees?
Yeah.
I would say probably Florida's nursing board just has a very large population. It's around 400,000, somewhere within that. And there's 2 million total on CE Broker today. Yeah, so that's going to be through the voluntary subscription. So anytime a licensee comes onto this platform, if you already know your requirements, you have your certificates, you're just reporting for yourself, there's no fee whatsoever. Where we're actually making our money is if someone needs a professional or a concierge account. And again, it's very similar to TurboTax, where those accounts can streamline the process for you. That's correct. That's correct. And we have seen other competitors try to do a model where you charge the providers to report either by credit hour or per course. And we've seen a lot of times they'll just raise the cost of the courses. So at the end of the day, the licensees end up paying one way or another. But with that 13%, it has been enough to fund our business model. We've been around since 2003, 2004 with Florida's Department of Health. So I can say early on, our business did operate at a loss until we had scaled out a little bit. But we really benefit from economies of scale now. So anytime a new board signs on with CE Broker, it doesn't require nearly as much resources as it did 10 years ago to get them up and live.
Are you contracted?
Yes, so we do Karen Whiteford's boards. I believe it's occupational therapy and athletic trainers. And I did bring a copy of the contracts here just to share with you all. So if you wanted to have your counsel look over it, it was approved by the AAG's office. So we're more than happy to share that as well. That's true. We've noticed with Texas, they have, I guess it's the DIR there. To work with any of the agencies in Texas, you have to be a DIR-approved vendor. But it's one of those situations like the chicken before the egg. It's very difficult to get approved as a DIR vendor without having an existing contract. So we've had a lot of tough time getting any contracts in Texas. No problem. Can say we are speaking with the marriage and family therapist group out there, so we're hopeful that we might get our first pretty soon.
So when we have, like, sometimes within our own state here, we have various groups that put on speakers, and they come through us for approval, so then that would be something then that Heather would forward that to you, where it shows this is something we're approving this speaking within our state. So that's how your database.
Yeah, that's correct. So any providers that you've already approved, you won't have to do any repeat work. So a lot of times if there's a list on the website or if Heather has any records of the approved providers or courses, we populate the system with that first. But any new approvals, you can complete those through CE Broker. So we can set up a process where that provider or that group could apply on CE Broker, and it would either go to Heather or to your board members to be reviewed for approval. So that can be facilitated through our platform. We do work with some boards who just do the approvals themselves, and once it's approved, they let us know. It can work either way. Yeah, that's correct. That's a great point. So a lot of boards do have disciplinary CE or CME. So in a lot of cases, that can be tracked through CE Broker. So if Jane Doe, an example licensee, needed to do an additional 2 hours for an ethics violation, it's easy for a staff member at the agency to log on, go to Jane Doe, buy her license number, and then add those 2 extra hours. So the board can see, you know, whether even if she has the same license type as someone else, she has an additional 2 hours for that violation. So that can be tracked. And this is available throughout the year. So the licensees can go on and they can report this through the renewal period, or they can do it at the last minute. We do see most people tend to wait right until the deadline to report everything. But we found the system is very rewarding for folks who are proactive. So if you've gone through and reported everything ahead of time, a lot of times there's no action required of you if you do happen to come up in the audit, as long as you've uploaded all of your documents into CE Broker. Sure, absolutely. And the last thing I wanted to give you all just a quick glimpse at here. Let's see if I can pull it up. So this is kind of what our course search looks like right now. And The screen's formatted a little weird here, but you can see, you know, a lot of times it's going to be broken down by what state that individual is, and then obviously their license type. And we'll even do notices on our core search to kind of spread awareness with the licensees. So you can kind of see this notice pinned at the top that says all podiatric physicians registered with the DEA to prescribe controlled substances need to complete an additional 2 hours in that course type. So licensees coming to our core search know. So if there's ever a change in Arizona legislation that introduces a new requirement, you know, we're always there to try and spread awareness as much as possible. But the licensees can come to the search, and any of the results that show up here are pre-vetted. So a provider can't get the course to show up on this search until it's either approved by the board or acceptable by a national accreditation. But we try and create almost a sandbox environment for the licensees. So there's never a situation where you find a course here and it's not going to be accepted by that board.
Are you contracted with the facility
board? Yes. Yeah.
You manage their CD?
Yes, that's correct. We do for Florida, and I believe Ohio as well is included under their medical board. It's kind of a conglomerate, so they do podiatry and osteopathic, I think. Yeah, so there's a few other medical boards where we do handle podiatry as well. So we have experience with the profession.
And I have a couple of questions. Can you explain why this system needs to interface with the licensing database?
So it's not mandatory. It's just something that a lot of boards find is nice to have. So for plenty of agencies, it's not integrated. They just use CE Broker as a standalone. But for any boards that want the process of enforcing CE to be hands-off, then we can be plugged in, you know, with that database. So anytime a licensee is going to renew, the system knows whether or not they've done their CE. So it's up to the board, you know, how you plan to enforce that, whether you want to stop them or give them a warning. But there's a lot of flexibility there. We really just kind of work within the terms we're given from the board.
And my only other question at this point is, if the board chooses to implement CE Broker, it's not required that all of our licensees.
Yeah, that's correct. So most boards will say, we're willing to accept this as a method to submit your CEUs. But for, you know, the portion of the population that prefers to just mail in their hard documents, a lot of times they won't force those individuals. We've seen some boards leverage a paper processing fee. So if you report it on CE Broker, it's free. But if you insist on mailing in your packet, there's sometimes a $20, you know, processing fee. But, you know, a lot of boards don't require the use of this. They just kind of use it to get less paperwork and kind of ease the burden for the board. And then within the folders that I passed out as well, there is a list of some of the boards that we work with today and a few different agency contacts. So if any of you wanted to reach out to another board or just speak with someone and kind of, you know, get their opinion first, don't take our word for it. So, you know, we welcome you to contact any of the boards that we work with today to hear it directly from the source. Yeah, so... share this as well. This is the contract with the Occupational Therapy and Athletic Trainer Boards. And there was, when we worked with the Attorney General's office, there's, you know, specific wording for any Arizona state agency that we had to include in there. So it would most likely be the same for this board as well. But you know, feel free to retain a copy of that.
Yeah.
Last documents I wanted to share with you all. This is something we usually have to get filled out anytime we do an RFP. So this is done by Florida's Department of Health. They had to answer a series of questions on CE Broker and rate us as a vendor. So anytime, you know, they had a change in requirements, how quickly did we respond and update the system, things like that. So this is their feedback as well. And then you can also retain a copy of our actual technical proposal here. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So then, so our next we have 5D. Or on the renewal application, dispensing, registration, Papalardo, but she also, involved with her, we had asked her for more specific details regarding why she was requesting for her CME.
Correct.
And she was going to be present on the phone?
Yes. So I let her know yesterday that as soon as the presentation was completed, I would call in. So let me... Cheers.
Welcome to CenturyLink Conferencing. Please enter your passcode, followed by the pound or hash key, and I'll connect you. Please hold while I confirm your passcode. Thank you. Your passcode is confirmed. When you hear the tone, you will be the second person to join the meeting.
Hi, this is Heather in the board office. Is this Dr. Pappalardo?
It is. Hi.
Hi, thank you.
Turn that.
Is it possible to turn this projector off?
That projector off. Light is bright.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Thank you. She's on the line?
Yes, Dr. Pappalardo is present telephonically.
Good morning, Dr. Pappalardo. This is Dr. Campbell, and we had reviewed your application and noted your request for extension on your receiving, getting your CEs. And then we had some questions and wanted to have more details. So
okay.
See that from Heather forwarded us your letter that you wrote regarding what had transpired. So give us a summary of again why you were requesting that extension.
So I had planned to attend two conferences in June. The first conference was the Western, and I was hospitalized during that meeting and was unable to attend. And shortly after, at that point, supposed to attend the C3 conference in Orlando, and my father passed away, and I had to miss the conference to be home. When I returned back, I had to continue. I had inpatient treatment twice and was unable to meet the deadline at that point.
You said you attend Grand Rounds and Journal Club with the VA, right?
Well, we have at the university, we have Grand Rounds 3 weeks of the month and various journal clubs. They don't have an official list for us because we just sort of manually sign into it, but I attend those regularly. I just don't have a printout from the university of those exact lecture titles.
You've attended CE, but you're not getting credit for it, or there's no certificate?
There's no certificate because it's just one credit per session, and they didn't have a printout available for it.
Do you know how many hours you've done?
I didn't keep track of them because I had planned to attend those conferences. I assumed that they did not count because it wasn't directly podiatry related. It's through the general surgery department. So I usually don't submit those because I had misunderstood based on the CME requirement that I assumed that they had to be on site for podiatry directly.
So most of that is you just general surgery, morbidity, mortality conference or something?
No, it's every week is a different session. So, for example, 2 weeks ago we had a FLAP lecture by Dr. Patel, a psychiatrist, but they can be, any sort of general surgery-related topics. not necessarily just directly related to foot and ankle. It can be about infection protocols or...
Yeah, I would think that some of those lectures would count towards your podiatry CMEs, because if you're talking about flaps or you're talking about infection mm-hmm. protocol, that's relevant for podiatry. If they're talking gotcha. About some mm-hmm. urology procedure, maybe not. But
right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I know at Honor Health, they will print out a list of all these lunchtime lectures and grand rounds that you attend at the end of the year, so you can go through them and highlight the ones that are related to your specialty. So that's
And I reached out to the university to ask for that, and they were unable to provide that to me in the time allotted that I had between when y'all last met and then when I needed to submit my response by. I can follow up with the university again. I had assumed that I would need to just attend an on-site lecture series.
Yeah, I think for your benefit for the future, you should keep track of those.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, because,
now that I understand that, for sure.
Right,
yeah.
So you don't run into this problem again. But right. back to the main point, I see your reason for your request for the extension, and I would agree with it, and I would move to grant you the extension to complete your CMEs. Looks like you're planning on the Desert Foot Conference in December. And remember, you can get 10 CMEs online as well, so you really only
great.
Need 15. So.
There's also, second. If it was a time crunch, there's Super Bones is next month in Vegas was an option I was going to put forth as well if you felt that the Desert Foot was too far out.
There is a bit of a issue with our statutes and how far we can extend. Mm-hmm. Is it 60 days or can
okay.
we continue to, can we extend on that based on a medical because I know there's times where we've waived them completely because of a medical.
Initially, I was not allowed to travel, but my doctor did lift that within the last month, that she said that I could travel to attend a conference. Initially, they didn't want me to fly, but that is the end of last month. She had said, especially if it was for licensing issues, that was no big deal.
Okay.
So ARS 32-829E states, if the board finds that an applicant for license renewal has not met the board's continuing education requirements, it may allow the licensee an additional 60 days to meet those requirements, after which time the applicant is ineligible for license renewal.
So that's 60 days from her asking for that extension, or is it post deadline for renewal?
Yeah, when does the clock on that 60 days start running?
How have you applied it in the past?
We've been kind of lax, and we've basically done 60 days from the request. The problem is if someone doesn't request into December, by that time, you know, you're already... halfway into the next year. So that's how we've always done it. So it would be 60 days from today, which is what, middle of October would be middle of December.
So if it's, yeah. Yeah, because it should be done before the end of this year.
And I think with the CME system changing for us, where a lot of them are going to be available online, we shouldn't have this problem in the future. Because even if you can't travel, you can do the CMEs online
right.
in the future. So this is probably going to be one of the last times we see this.
Mm-hmm.
So my recommendation would be that we extend 60 days from today when we are approving it. So that would give you to December 10th to complete. So whichever program you think will get you done. But remember, if you don't do the Desert Foot for some reason, now we're in trouble because we can't extend
for sure.
on that. So
understood. I mean, that would be my plan, is to attend Desert Foot, and I had hoped to attend Super Bones, at least a portion of it, which would get me done with more than enough time at that point.
Well, and you can also do some online courses. So
right.
So, and you know, too, part of that is 3 hours of opioid training. You've got to have
your Correct.
And there's the state has an online course that is a good course. We can make sure that Heather and you connect, and she and you have that website, and you create an account on there, and you can take those courses and get that done, because that is part of the requirement.
Correct.
Dr. Campbell?
And Mr. Rhodes had already seconded the motion, so we're...
Just to clarify, will this motion include approving her renewal upon completion of the continuing education? How does the board want to handle it?
So if she attends Desert Foot or Superbones, those are both programs that are approved by the board. So she wouldn't have to get those approved. She would just submit those to us, and the board will review it to make sure that she actually attended. And based on that, we're okay. So when you complete the program, you just have to notify the board that you completed
okay.
it and send your certificate or a little brief note that you...
I'll send it right over to
okay.
Heather.
Okay.
The motion then is subject to completing the CCNA within 60 days of the date of the letter.
Yes.
Okay. Second.
Any other discussion or questions? All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So moved. Okay, thank you, Dr. Popolardo, for...
Thank you so much for all your time.
...talking to us. Okay.
Alrighty.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I had forgotten to ask earlier, did anybody have any conflicts of interest on anything? All right, so we have the 5C, our compliance update.
I received an email from Dr. Heyman yesterday, and he just indicated that he performed any osteotomies during the past month, and should he perform any, he will report it. And that was yesterday at about 2 o'clock.
There hasn't been any. All right, so then on to 5E, we have on two renewal applications, malpractice matters that were indicated on the applications. So the first one that we ask for more information is or it looks at
you can see from my email correspondence that I asked that question because there wasn't a lot of documentation.
And there was in the packet there was some of the legal pleadings that were in there. Mm-hmm. The complaint was kind of like in that draft form, but not situation appears. And he had done, he was doing limited management with the patient PCP. And he stopped cumulative PCP, but anyway, he had his INR below 2.0. And then, so the other attorney apparently was saying that this was inappropriate. And then it looks like the additional information, it says that the lawsuit was dropped. Doctor's attorney explained to the plaintiff's attorney how he would have prevented the problem. That's very bad. But there, we didn't have anything in the legal documents that said that that had occurred. It was just page 100. Additional information. Like they're just closing it. Everybody's going to be responsible for their own costs. So what we have to
And there's no complaint from the patient. This is just a...
Right. This is correct. Just what he... Right. Exactly. So... On his... No direct complaint was made to the board by the patient. Just a malpractice case that was... No, because of, I mean, it medical.
Yeah. Okay. Not to file a...
I don't think we can, yeah, not to open a board complaint. Do you have any comments? Or do we have to go into executive session? Or you...
I just want to make sure that I'm...
An E1. Oh, I'm so no.
This is
oh,
E2.
I'm so sorry. That is my error. Yes, we are on E2, Chad Westfall.
Chad.
I misspoke. It's not Dr. Moore. I apologize. Thank you for I was incorrect. Sorry.
But Barbara is correct. This is Chad's statement that the case had been dropped. Need any?
You know, it would be nice if we could obtain a copy of whatever
final disposition.
Yeah, whatever final executed, other than just the emails. And assuming that we get that, we could dismiss it subject to receipt of the final dismissal of the lawsuit. Because then we would have to file something.
And is that something that I can? As long as it's a dismissal, I can let them know that there's no action. Or do you want it to come back to the board?
I don't think it needs to come back to the board, but I'd like Barbara to look at it.
Yeah, I'd like to see.
Sure.
So based on that the case has been dismissed, Dr. Campbell reviews it, then
we'll
file an investigation in this case.
And if for some reason that's not the case, we can bring it back to the board.
Okay.
I'll make a motion to request that the executive director obtain proper legal documentation.
Yeah, I think we could make a motion to dismiss the case. Is that really not open?
It's
take
not
no.
even a case yet. It's not an investigation.
We have an open abort. I should make a motion not to open a board complaint.
Yeah, take no action subject to confirmation that the matter has been properly dismissed.
Sure.
That's our motion. Thank you, Mark.
I second that.
Okay, any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
I'm sorry, I gave the wrong doctor name. That's okay, back to E1, which is Dr. Stephen. His is relatively new case. He sent, and again, his was on his reapplication form. There's a claim of negligence case pending. I guess on the 10th, or the 1st of October, they had done depositions and they were doing. Do we have any other, have you received anything else since then?
What's the basis of this?
They're claiming medical negligence. Claiming emotional, financial, and physical hardship. Standard of care was upheld. It said, I read in the document, it said standard of care is upheld. So how can you claim negligence if the standard of care is upheld? Can you answer that, Mark?
That's a very good question.
Well, now that they've had their mediation, and that's been today's what, the 9th, so 8 days ago, we in this instance should be given information because we can't make a determination if there was a breach of, if a state statute was violated.
Want to continue the matter and. From the parties on how the mediation session went.
That we'll table till.
All right.
Alrighty, so we have Heather has our 5F for the year.
Tuesday and Thursday meetings this year.
Right, and I thought I was ahead of the game when I went to reserve the conference rooms. They did that mid-September, and those Wednesdays were already taken for this room and other rooms. So in the Thursday, I think it was. I did do the Tuesday and Thursday depending on holidays and room availability. So that's why I highlighted those 3 dates. I know we typically have our meetings on Wednesday, so if there's a conflict, it's far out, but you could let me know in advance. And I can continue to check the room schedules, see if any other agencies maybe cancel a Wednesday meeting. We only have 3 conference rooms in this building. I'll share them.
We used to get bumped into that little tiny room in the basement.
Yeah.
Occasionally.
The dungeon.
The dungeon. We have windows here. They used to meet at one of the doctor's houses. Remember that?
That goes back a very long.
It goes back
long.
A while.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that spirit of
we had to go through some of the minutes, and they were like handwritten, It took place at... Who's the guy that used to be on Northern and 43rd?
Dr. Cates, right?
One of their houses.
All righty. Applications for licensing and dispensing registrations for Dr. Devin William, Richard Martin, Brian Rex. Current on payment.
Second.
Any discussion?
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We're making progress. At the last meeting, the board did approve the temporary license application, and it is proposing a $100 fee for that. So I did put in another exemption request to the governor's office to the rulemaking moratorium to add that fee to rule. I did speak with Ms. Rajakovic about that fee, and she does not anticipate that there is going to be any issue implementing that fee, but because it involves finances, it has to go to OSPB. So, and the last exemption request I put in that OSPB had to analyze took about 4 months. So hopefully I get a faster response on this one. The previous exemption request that I requested, Ms. Rajakovich did approve the continuing education request that all licensees can now obtain continuing education via electronic means. She did not address whether or not prorating the initial license fee was approved, so I did talk to her about that, and again, she has to go back to OSPB and follow up with OSPB to see if they did analyze that request. At this point, the governor's office is not going to approve the increase for the renewals. I did speak with Susie Myers. She did a 10-year study for this initial request, but it was a prior, for previous 10 years. So what Susie Myers wants to do is she wants to do another study moving forward, projecting the future with the board's finances. And when I get that study back from Ms. Myers, and she indicated it should be this week sometimes, then depending on her analysis, I may ask OSPB for their data as to, you know, how they came to the board should be able to sustain for 20 years. So that is where that is at. Again, I'll keep letting the board know where we're at in the process. I have reached out to Senator Brophy McGee. Since I sent this report, I did send Senator Brophy McGee another email, and I did copy Dr. Campbell on that email. I'm hoping to get a response from her, but I still have not gotten a response. If I don't receive a response within another week or so, I'll contact her assistant and just ask where we're at in that process. We need to get a sponsor soon if we're going to run legislation. And then I did outline, even though legislative council is responsible for drafting the new legislation, making sure it's all legal, I went ahead and made some changes to the rules and statutes just to make sure that I'm understanding what the board wants. And those changes are in blue in the rules and statutes. So if you have any concerns about that or any changes, let me know. And then just so we know what other jurisdictions are doing, I did ask Mr. Russell Stoner with the Federation to issue a call for comment to other jurisdictions regarding some of the changes that our board wishes to make, and we've gotten 8 responses back, and I did include those in the materials. When I get more responses, I'll forward them to the board, and this is just for informational purposes, just in case when we are ready to run this legislation, if the legislature has any questions for us, you know, as to what other jurisdictions are doing. So we don't need to respond to that. So, and that's all I have, unless you guys have any questions. And if, yeah, and if you have, you know, any concerns, like I said, about the rules or statutes, and or about the statutes that I drafted, you can always email me, call me.
So, did you reach out to other states to see whether they include the APMA Code of Ethics in there? Is that what you were asking?
Yeah, that was one of the questions that we asked.
And the response is in this little graph that you gave us?
Yes. And
Nevada and Ohio say yes.
Correct.
In Ohio, they have a combine board. They have one podiatrist.
And it looks like Washington does not, but they have an all-encompassing statute regarding unprofessional conduct. I don't know if that would include what our board is looking for, including the...
Include the APM.
Well, we would remember we had a case recently where there was allegations against a physician for non-professional behavior in a facility. We're covered on our statutes where you don't don't do that stuff with patients.
And how does the APMA Code of Ethics satisfy that?
You know, we probably, that was just an option we had as far as trying to come up with something that just, we could use. You know, if we should review that, look at it together and see, yeah.
Before we want to include those in ours, because I don't know.
But I had sent some to Frankie to look at and to Heather. So you've got those, you should have all those documents.
Okay.
So we should probably do that at a future meeting.
Yeah, or you should send that to the board
members. Yeah, have everybody look at it and be prepared.
And there is a link to that, too, on our website.
APMA Code of Ethics? Okay. All right, so I think before the next meeting.
Yes, that's an excellent idea, yeah. We had to start somewhere because now with, you know, if we were trying to get something done legislatively.
Yes.
And what's that called, you add it by referral or by reference?
By reference. And you can see how I added it. But again, legislative council will go through and make sure it's all legal. So I'm sure that they'll change the wording on that. I just wanted to, my purpose was just to make sure that I am encompassing what the board wants, you know, that it's reflecting what the board is looking for.
One of the other things we're looking for, trying to ask two of the other boards is, do they allow podiatrists to do full body HMEs?
Probably going to get a mix.
As you know, some of these, you know, we've had questions. People, Heather has forwarded me questions from people that are asking that, you know, that can they be doing those? But find out information from everything. So yeah, if we can, the APMA Code of Ethics is on our website. So, but if you can just send those,
sure,
out to everybody, and if we just put that on the agenda item.
You know, does our state association have a code of ethics in your
bylaws?
Or is it because you're a sub?
So
it's whatever the APM.
Okay.
All right.
I don't know. I haven't, you know, there are so many groups have, you know, their professional code of ethics.
I could look at that. It should have something.
Mark, what did the other?
Maybe you can explain to him the case so he understands.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so there was a doctor who, there was multiple allegations of unprofessional conduct in the facility where he was doing surgery. And he basically got his hand slapped by the medical director of the facility. He hired an attorney and took a course in, how would you call it, professional behavior. But we couldn't do anything because we didn't have anything in the staff.
Yeah. And
it wasn't directed towards a patient. It was directed towards a nurse.
Right. And they may well be something in the APMA that would address that type of conduct, you know. But without seeing it, I don't know that having that as part of your practice act would necessarily have helped you in the disposition of this case.
How do other, do you know of other medical societies and how they deal with a situation like this? Or attorneys, for instance?
Yeah. I can tell you that a number of state agencies, health agencies in Arizona have statutes very similar to that in Oregon. And even though Oregon answered no in that they don't incorporate it directly or specifically by reference, they do say any conduct or practice contrary to the recognized standards of ethics or the medical or profession. And That is something that a lot of agencies have. So they incorporate by reference generically the code of ethics of the discipline. So for instance, in like for the Board of Behavioral Health Examiners, you know, it's a composite board. They license four different professions. So for social workers, they fall under the social work code of ethics. For professional counselors, it would be the professional counselor's code of ethics. And if they, if it's determined by the board that they their conduct in any particular case violated a code of ethics, that would be an act of unprofessional conduct. Same thing with the medical board. I believe the dental board has something similar as well. Again, it's much more like the Oregon language as opposed to the Ohio or Nevada, where they specifically mention that a violation of the APMA would constitute a violation of the Nevada Practice Act. I don't believe that's really any different, though, than Oregon, which just references its unprofessional conduct to engage in a violation of your code of ethics. And if there is only one really kind of model code of ethics, then at an administrative hearing, that really wouldn't be an issue.
So the problem we had is everything that referenced ethical or unprofessional behavior was referenced towards the relationship with the patient.
Yes.
Not a relationship with an employee or someone at a surgery center or a hospital. And we felt like this activity was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It fell under this person's ability to practice podiatry because that's at the time, but the Attorney General thought that because it wasn't a patient, we had no jurisdiction having any say in what was done or how we dealt with it. They couldn't, we couldn't even discuss the investigation. Couldn't even have an investigation.
Yeah. You know, what I'd probably like to do is talk to Frankie about that. She was the AG that you're referring to as far as the legal advice. You know, and review the acts of unprofessional conduct. That strikes me as a fairly narrow interpretation. Lots of boards have very kind of one or two provisions that are generally very broad to be kind of used as a catch-all, because you can't, you know, capture every possible situation when you're trying to define unprofessional conduct. But, you know, some boards have statutes that, you know, generically say, you know, something like Oregon, it's an act of unprofessional conduct to, you know, in any way engage in conduct that is disparaging to the profession. And, again, I'd have to review it specifically to see if there are any provisions like that. I do know that, you know, many code of ethics, though, go beyond just the patient medical provider relationship, and that's just how to, you know, interact with your peers, people you supervise, people that supervise you. And I can't speak specifically to the APMA. I'd be more than happy to take a look at the code, though, to see if it would, you know, cover those type of situations. I don't know if anybody here is you know, is familiar with any of the provisions of the APMA that might have helped you find that, in that case, the licensee engaged in unprofessional conduct.
The other issue was that if, I think it's in our statutes, that if there's a violation of state or federal law, that's an act of unprofessional conduct. And sexual harassment, racial discrimination, which occurred allegedly in this case, seemed like they would be a violation of state or federal law.
Yeah, the question there is, though, has that already been determined, or we going to have to be the ones to determine that, in fact,
right,
a violation of state law occurred?
Okay.
That's generally something that we don't do.
She would have had to have reported it to the authorities, let them figure it out, and then come to us and say, yeah, they said there was a violation.
And if I can interrupt just real quick, I'm just scanning the APMA Code of Ethics, and they do have a professionalism section.
Comment here. She probably
that is something to keep in mind.
And they do have a staff respect and advocacy section as well. I don't have anything else. One, since I've sent the log, I've received one new one. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing at least 7 or 8. At least. I have 3 scheduled already. I know that Dr. Polakoff is returning from out of the country on Friday, and she has 3 preliminary reports for me that she had sent prior to leaving. When she gets back, she's going to finish those up, and I expect that I'll at least have a couple more.
Are we due Dr. Polakoff to give?
So I have, that is something that I'm sending to Dr. Polakoff tomorrow, are the last 2 files for August and September that Dr. Clark has forwarded to me. So I'll send those to Dr. Polakoff, and as soon as she can get her report back to me, if it's in time for the November meeting, we'll review it in November. Otherwise, it would be December.
Tuesday.
No. But that's something that I held on to because I knew that Dr. Polakoff was out of the country.
Call to the public for, do you have anything, Dr. Peters?
Yeah, I appreciate it. Any comments on the CE program? Seems like that's the way it's evolved.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
The other thing is I wasn't in favor of anything that was going to cost the licensees anymore. Hospitals, from boards, from everywhere. We don't need any more costs. But since they have a program that's no charge, that basic program, I don't know if you've had contact with anybody that's uses this program, maybe contacting the Florida Podiatry Board.
So I've spoken with Karen Whiteford, the executive director of the Occupational Therapy and Athletic Training. I do want to ask her whether or not the system interfaces with e-licensing for her board, because I think that that could potentially be a problem with the contract. And
oh, with e-licensing?
Yes, and trying to get a contract through procurement and so forth. So that's something that I wanted to ask Karen Whiteford about. But if it's not mandatory that we system does not have to interface, then I don't think it'd be a problem.
As you're moving forward on this, the only thing that I'd ask too is that as you're looking into the sensory everything, that we also took a look at our rules, and our rules are very specific that on renewal it's the licensee that needs to submit a statement of what courses they took, and how does that
from a third party on their own.
Yeah, that it may be a little bit more involved than it appears on the face. Even though it may be a terrific tool, but we just need to make sure that it's also something that about rule changer if we need to first create rule change.
So possible future agenda item meeting for anybody has anything?
Status from the radiology board?
We do have an item next month on the agenda, and Frankie will be addressing the board regarding that. We waited until November so that way Dr. Foreman could be here as well.
Good.
And plus, Frankie wasn't at this meeting.
Okay. And you want us to leave these here for you?
Yes, please. And I will return them at the November meeting. And like I said, I'll send a flash drive. The material's on it for November's meeting.
On your personal computer, but don't download it.
Yeah, don't download the material.
So it's like, okay, it's security. So our next meeting is November 13th. And I will move to adjourn.
So now I'm in kind of a conundrum here. I thought the operating room where you call your doctor's work was a lot like Alan Alda in MASH. Am I wrong?
No, it kind of is.
Okay.
But I think that's changed a little bit in the Me Too movement.